Welcome, everyone, to our call. This is Will, and it's just about 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock here in the Pacific, and it's October 17th, 2013. We're delighted that you have all joined us for the World Peace Diet Circle, the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training and Mastery Program, and as you all know, if you're on this call, this is a new service that we're using, and we're just delighted that this has unfolded for us. We're kind of doing a new chapter in the World Peace Diet Circle. As we all know, I've talked about it before, the last couple of months, that Steve Prusak is not going to be with us anymore, so we're moving to a different system, and hopefully it's all going well for everyone. I just wanted to let you know at the very beginning here, if you would like to make a comment or to ask a question, then instead of in the past it was always star 2, now it is star 6. So feel free to at any point press star 6 if you'd like. So we have just a wonderful opportunity, I think, to be together this evening, and I'm just delighted about it. I'm calling actually from Cincinnati. I'm at the Jubilee Peace Fest, which was started 5 years ago. It was inspired by the World Peace Diet. Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson are the two main people here. Mark is the one who was really very first time started doing World Peace Diet study groups in Cincinnati probably 7 or 8 years ago. But after the World Peace Diet came out, and Anna Ferguson has a yoga studio here that she changed the name of it to World Peace Yoga. And so there's a nice crowd of folks here. It's not a huge conference, but I think it's going to be getting bigger over the weekend. And I'll be doing some teaching here. I just gave a lecture here actually earlier this evening. So I'm calling from Cincinnati, and that's an unusual situation because normally, as you all probably are aware, we're based out in Northern California. So I'd like to welcome everyone to the call and invite us, as we very often do in the very beginning, to take a moment and just breathe together. Maybe if you're at a place where you can comfortably and easily close your eyes, then I invite you to do that. And but it's not necessary. And just take a moment and just give thanks for this time that we have to be together this evening, knowing that we are part of a movement on this earth of humanity, questioning the official stories of our culture, questioning the rampant violence towards animals and towards ecosystems and towards each other, and striving, yearning, aspiring to live life in a way that embraces all living beings with kindness and compassion. It's an honor to be part of this movement, and even though the challenges can be enormous, we can take a moment and feel our connection with each other, with our loved ones, with everyone who's working so hard and diligently to help bring a more spiritually evolved perspective into our lives individually and into our lives together. We give thanks knowing that all of the ripples that radiate out into the world from our being together here this evening on this call will be ripples that bring peace and healing, joy and freedom, and an awakening to the truth that we are, to the benefit of all living beings, in the past, present, and future. So it is. All right, great. So thank you again for joining us and for being part of this movement of vegan awareness. And as you all know, the World Peace Diet book that I wrote back has its own perspective on veganism. The idea is that it's essentially a spiritual path. Whether we think of ourselves as being spiritual or not, I don't think it matters all that much. But the idea of yearning and aspiring and working to bring peace and love and kindness to all living beings, I think, is really the earmark of all the spiritual teachings of the planet. And it's not just my opinion. This has been said by many people from every tradition, I think, really. So it's great to be together and be able to do this work. So in the last month, what's been happening? It seems like a lot has happened, at least for us. Last time we did this call, we were on the road again. That time it was Madeline and me together. We were traveling, rolling home for the first time in quite a few months, and doing a lecture tour to the Northwest. We get to see a lot of you on that tour, up into Victoria, in Vancouver, Seattle area, Portland, all over the place in Oregon, Salem, Eugene, Ashland, Roseburg, and we visited the animal sanctuary called Lighthouse Sanctuary, which was very inspiring to be able to be there. I really feel that whenever we create a sanctuary for animals, a place where they can live their lives without being abused by humans, without being imprisoned or harmed by them, that we are creating a sacred space on this earth. And I think the more we can do that, the better. The sacred space can be a place like that where we actually take care of the animals. And, they're typically at that sanctuary, they had been rescued from factory farming. There were pigs and cows and turkeys and lots of chickens, ducks and geese, llamas and rabbits and boy, there's so many kinds of animals there, that goats and sheep. I just really especially love goats. I guess everybody loves goats, but the goats seem to have this wonderful personality. They come right up, and they're friendly, and they like to play, and they're just hilarious, really funny, just so sweet, friendly. I guess they all are when you get to know them, but that's one kind of sanctuary. The other kind of sanctuary, I think, is if we can have a space where wild animals, free living animals can live their lives without being attacked and hunted and trapped or whatever. So we have both kinds of sanctuaries on our planet. We need more of them. But it was great to be there for that. And to just as I talked quite a bit, I think last time, about the gardening aspect and how we were really able to experience so many vegans gardening, veganic gardening, and people gardening and growing their own food in ways that was very abundant, huge amounts of food coming out of these gardens that we brought home with us, some of it, and we're still eating it. And Madeline, of course, now is at home just having a great time gardening with the garden that we have at our house. And in fact, I actually see that Madeline is on the call. I wonder, I'm in Cincinnati, and she's in Hidden Valley Lake. Ellen, I guess I muted your phone. Are you there?
I'm here. Hello, everybody. And I'm holding the fort here at home, and I'm doing lots of gardening, veganic gardening, and it's so much fun. And we like to grow it bigger and bigger, the garden, so we have more and more food and we can give food away. And right now it's sunset here and it's just gorgeous. And this afternoon I really experienced some hummingbirds celebrating their lives. There were first only two and then four and then five. And they were kind of playing catch and seek and everything. And they flew like 1 foot away from me. And I felt the wind they made. They were looking at me. It was so much fun. And animals just love to celebrate their lives. And so it's just so wonderful that you're on the phone and are interested in and even active. I heard about Lily, about doing something special. We'll hear later. And I can't wait, Lily, to hear you. So this is it about, but one more thing I like to say. Grow sprouts. If you don't have a garden, grow sprouts. I had a big portion of sprouts for supper with some baked potatoes and tomatoes from the garden and cucumber and chives and parsley, a little veggies, and it was so fantastic, so good. So grow sprouts. It's easy and it's clean food.
Thank you. All right.
So this was a whole lecture. Sorry about that. I had to unload.
Great. Well, thanks. It's great to hear your voice. I am already missing Madeline. I've been away for almost 24 hours here, more than 24 hours. So, good. I'm glad to hear you're enjoying the sprouts. That's great. All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
I'll catch you in a sec later.
Yeah, I love you. I love you all. Bye.
Hi. And, yeah, that's one of my jobs, actually, is to grow sprouts. And Madeline has been able to work wonders. And I know a lot of you have gardens, but it's just after 17 years living in an RV and to be able to see off these tomatoes and cucumbers and zucchinis and all kinds of things, herbs. Boy, she really has a lot of herbs and peppers and all these wonderful. And we've planted quite a few fruit trees also. I think that's going to be happening more and more as in some ways our food system becomes less and less reliable. We'll have to, I think all of us, come to terms with realizing that growing food is a sacred action and it's a fun thing to do. It's a really, I think in many ways, a very spiritual undertaking. And we can learn a lot about ourselves and about the earth by tuning into the earth and growing our own food. And as now, wherever you are, you can grow sprouts. And we've been doing that for many years in our rolling home. That was the one kind of gardening that we could do. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to be talking about a few things here, but I'm going to open up in this particular format with this new system we have. I'm going to open up. It's called opening up the Q&A. So you're going to hear a little voice when I do this, and that means. I mean, you can do it any time, but it means that it was sort of formally open for comments and questions if you'd like. So here we go. Okay. So. So you'll hear that. But anyway, so if you would like to ask a question about anything in the World Peace Diet, this is a good chance. I know some of you are going through the World Peace Diet first time. Some of you are going through it maybe for the second or third time. And I want to give you the opportunity, if you have any comments or questions about the material, any of the ideas that are in there, feel free. This is a great opportunity to do that. And everything is, you know, shifting in our system. We just want to allow more people the opportunity to be part of these calls. So I think as you saw in the email I sent out, for the rest of this year, it's just wide open. We're not going to be, we're not asking for any payment or anything like that on any of these. This is just an open forum for us to share together. So if you have a question about how to apply veganism in your specific instance or how you can help share these ideas with other people, this is a good time to pose those questions. Or if you have any success stories you'd like to share or any misery stories you'd like to share that could maybe benefit from some feedback from either myself or Tara. Tara's on the phone and she's with us also, and she's a longtime World Peace Diet facilitator and activist, and really we respect Tara so much for her vegan understanding and her commitment to the cause and all of the help that she's given us over the years. And we have a huge amount actually of experience here on this call with all of the callers. A lot of you, I know, I can see who you are. you've been vegans for a long time. You have a lot to bring to the table, literally. So, but I wanted to maybe before we dive in, if I don't see any questions pressing here, I just want to ask. Well, actually, one question just did come in. By the way, hopefully, if you for some reason cannot ask a question by phone. If you're listening just on your computer or on Skype, go ahead and I would say just send me an email, willtuttle@earthlink.net. I'll just kind of keep an eye on that. If any emails come in, I will keep an eye on that too. But there is actually a call. Someone has their hand raised here. So I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. The area code is 650690. That number, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Cool. My name is Rochelle, and I wanted to just hear you speak possibly about how to bring up eloquently the concept of compassion for all living beings when people are so closed-minded. Just as an example, I give a lot of talks on plant-based diets, and you can get people to go on the health end of it, they'll look at that, but when you bring up the issue of animals, I always feel like a tension in the audience, which could be also my discomfort, which I don't want to, not in saying it, but just wanting to be received by the audience. So can you speak on ways that you could bring that into conversation without hitting people over the head with being guilty? Because, you don't want to lose the audience.
Right. Great. Okay, thank you so much, Rochelle, for your question. And if anyone else thinks you can do have something to contribute to this conversation, please feel free to press star 6 on your phone. But, that's something that I've wrestled with myself for 30 years, at least, I think, because I speak all the time at churches and other places. Very often people don't expect that I'm going to be talking about cruelty to animals. And so I guess there's two primary rules that I've tried to follow, in a sense. One is to tell my own story, to just use I statements to tell about what I realized and what I found out and what I discovered, because people can never argue about that, and it sets people at ease, I think, basically, to just sort of tell one's own story, what I discovered and so forth. And then that's one rule. And the other rule, or the other sort of guiding principle, perhaps, is to basically couch it always in terms that of the culture, not in terms of you as a person, but as the culture, that we live in a culture where all of us are, in many ways, forced from the time of little children to eat meals that contain meat, dairy products, and eggs. And not only is it not good for our health, we find out later that these foods have a lot of saturated fat and cholesterol and toxins and acidifying animal protein, and they just are hard on our systems. But also it causes enormous suffering for animals. And to smile, I think it's really helpful to smile, like really be aware of smiling when you're talking and be friendly to people and say explicitly, I'm not in any way blaming anyone. I understand. I went through this myself, and sometimes I tell stories about how I was the older brother, and my little sister was maybe 3 years old, and my mother said, "Can you please feed your little sister? Help out here." And I would say, "Sure, mommy, I'll help. I like to help." And I would feed her, and of course she kept spitting out the meat, and I would keep kind of making it like an airplane. Here comes the protein, make it really exciting and fun for her, and even though she still spit it out, Humor really helps. People can laugh, and they go, they kind of remember that, how they kept spitting out the meat, maybe. So I think using humor, telling stories, keeping it light so people don't feel like you're pointing your finger at them specifically, that they're a bad person. Because no one, as soon as they feel that, there's a sense of blame or a sense of tension or discomfort in the room, then there's basically, there's a sense that they're going to argue mentally with what you're saying. So I think that's why you're just telling your own story, maybe how you began to realize, I don't know what your story is, Rochelle, exactly, but if you went into it perhaps initially for health reasons and you found out that eating a plant-based diet is better for your health reasons, then you can talk about how you, once you were no longer eating so many animal foods or any animal foods at all, then you were more open to actually hearing about the suffering that animals go through, and then your motivation shifted, and you began to actually realize that it was even more of a powerful motivation to refrain from buying meat, dairy products, and eggs, not just because it was better for your health, but it was because it was better for the health of the animals. You can tell that story, perhaps. Isaac Bashevis Singer, the famous writer, was sitting at a at a dinner, and he didn't order any chicken. And the woman next to him, of course, was ordering chicken, and she turned to him and she said, "Oh, I see you're a vegetarian." And he said, "Yes." And she said, "Are you a vegetarian for health reasons?" And he said, "Yes." She said, "I see." And then he said, "I'm vegetarian for the health of the chicken." And so, you know, telling those kinds of stories, I think whenever people laugh at those kinds of things, the message gets in underneath the radar. You know, it kind of goes in and it plants in their consciousness in a way where you're both on the same side. You're both laughing, and, you know, you can kind of say, you know, and you can say, you know, it's kind of like me. I started out doing it for my health, but then after a while I started to do it for the health of the chickens. And again, not that implying that you're any better than anyone. I think it's important for us also as vegans to consciously cultivate a sense of looking at people with eyes of kindness and compassion, because I know, see, the thing is, and I've definitely been guilty of this, when we see so many rampant injustices in the world, and we especially see it toward animals, and we see Burger King ads and Kentucky Fried Chicken ads and people going into these places and buying all this, it's not difficult to begin to be judgmental of these people somewhat in our minds, thinking, why are people so unconscious? Don't they realize not only is this causing them cancer and heart disease, but it's not only that, but I mean, it's killing animals, and it's not necessary, and it's destroying ecosystems, and it's causing so much, you know, well, what's wrong with people? And so there's this underlying, sometimes in our minds, I think it's understandable, kind of a storyline that people are unfortunately not too smart, you know, or not very aware, or not very compassionate, or kind, or awake, or whatever it is. And so that'll, you know, I think in many ways when we speak to people, we are more telepathic than we realize. And these, the basic underlying assumption will kind of just, it'll sneak right through. People will feel that, and it'll make them uncomfortable. So I found it's also important for myself to try to undo that, to not go down that road in my own mind of blaming and judging and saying how stupid and ridiculous people are. And because I've met a lot of vegans who really love animals and hate people, you know, and I definitely see why. If you watch the movie Earthlings and some of these other movies and you see the terrible things people do to animals, you know, it's sort of but to me it's a relatively shallow view. You know, I hate people because of the terrible things they do. And I think we have to go deeper. That's one of the things we really try in the World Peace Diet to emphasize, that we're all subjected to a cultural program that wounds us, all of us. And so even the perpetrators are wounded. And we as vegans we're fortunate enough to have been able to heal the wounds that we've endured at the hands of our culture. And we've been able to actually heal them so much that we're able to actually not eat animal foods. You know, that's not that easy in our society to stand up to the continual barrage of pressure coming at us from every angle to eat meat and dairy especially. And as well as the inner voices, perhaps, of our parents, you know, growing up, and teachers, and all the advertising and everything. So it takes quite a bit, I think, for us to be able to withstand all that and get on a strong, solid footing where it doesn't have any effect on us anymore. And then beyond that, to not look down at people who are still where we once were, basically, where most of us were in that position at one point, where we were, you know, blithely eating away just like they are, and we didn't know any better. And so to try to join forces with people who are eating animal foods, and to be partners and friends, and say we're on the same page, basically. I mean, we can both look in the same direction and see that we've all been born into a culture that has as its living core owning and enslaving and imprisoning and killing animals for food and other products, primarily for food, but for many products. And that this conditions us at a very deep level. And then just say it in ways like this, like, you know, but I discovered that by questioning that programming that we've all gone through, not only did my health get better, but my relationships got better because I felt better about myself. I had more self-confidence. I felt more inner peace. And I think it's very important for us, if we go vegan, to also practice whatever kinds of meditation, prayer, creativity, getting into nature, gardening, whatever it is that for you, art, music, hugging a tree or taking a swim, or I don't know what it is, that everyone has their own, we all have our own unique things that kind of help us to feel a sense of gratitude and a sense of joy of being alive. I think it's natural for us as human beings to be grateful for the life that we have, and I think it's natural for us to be joyful to be alive. I see it in animals all the time. When we look out, we see deer and we see birds and we see animals. Most of the time, they're just celebrating. They're just running around, flying, singing, playing, and enjoying their lives. And I think this is the way with this, the beauty of creation is essentially wonderful. And so this is the natural thing. So I think it's very important for us as vegans to cultivate with it as best we can every single day, so that we are embodying a sense of joy and gratitude for our life. Because nobody wants to join a movement where everybody's miserable and judgmental and attacking and blaming and throwing guilt trips around. No one wants to be part of that. And I think what veganism is essentially is the next evolution for us as human beings, where we begin to move in the direction of embracing life as a wonderful gift and sharing this with others in a positive way. So the World Peace Diet training, essentially, which I think, the same thing as Don Watson was talking about, is questioning the official stories of our culture, especially around food, and cultivating the inner ethical stance where we're going to live our lives as best we can, not to cause suffering to other living beings, animals or human animals, either kind of animals. And then to look beyond the surface level of people's actions and try to see the beauty in them, the being in them before they were so damaged by their society, and address that in them when we address them. I think if you can do that, Rochelle, when you're talking to people, don't look at them. This is something I've had to practice. I still practice quite a bit, and it's not that easy. Instead of looking out and seeing a bunch of meat eaters or omnivores or, sometimes we call them pre-vegans. I think seeing them as pre-vegans helps. But seeing people that are open to the possibilities and who just perhaps need to get some information, because the only way I could have gotten out of being someone who ate meat, dairy products, and eggs regularly and routinely was to see the example of others that weren't doing it and hear from them why it was that they were that way. And so each of us can be that for other people. Again, the bottom line is the only reason people eat animal foods is because of the communities that they were raised in. And the primary way that people are able to evolve beyond that is through other communities or other individuals and communities being an example of that in a positive, proactive way. So I hope that helps. But again, the basic idea, number one, to tell your own personal story, and just doing that, no one can argue with. No one can argue with your story, and that's the beauty of it. It's just say what happened to you and how you discovered this, and agree with people, not disagree with them fundamentally. And then number two, to turn, if there's any blame at all, obviously on some level there's an underlying sense of blame in the sense, or at least a sense of remorse or a sense of something, some violence being committed. But and it is being committed by these people who take off their wallets and pay. I mean, that they are the driving force. But to help people see that they are agents of their culture, and that it's not in their best interest to continue doing that. And then move, try to move in that direction with the conversation in a loving way. I think in the bottom, at the end of the day, that's the best thing we can do. And then maybe the final little point I'll make is to trust as best you can and cultivate as best you can your intuition. And that's sort of the real powerful element here. I don't think that there's an actual analytical way that we can sort of reduce this whole procedure. I think when we start getting in touch with our inner spiritual wellsprings of joy and understanding and compassion, we begin to be better at knowing what to say in what situation. And it's very unpredictable because sometimes you'll be more hard, and sometimes you'll be more soft, and sometimes you'll be more flowing, and sometimes you'll be maybe more rigid or whatever. And it's not to say that one is better than the other. Certain situations will call out for certain things, you know. It's like there's this great story of this old Buddhist master. Somebody was complaining to this Buddhist teacher that they were so loose, you know, with other students. They were so strict with them or something like that. And he said, well, it's very simple. It's like this. You know, if I see a man and he's blind, and he's walking down the street and he's going off to the left, I'll say, go left. You know, excuse me. I'll say, go right, go right. And if he's going off to the right, I'll say, go left, go left. So you gotta kind of tune into where people are at and say, you know, whatever it is that they need to hear. Sometimes people need to hear something very, if they're already very rigid, you know, you have to say something much more gentle. And if they're like very overly loose, then you have to be kind of a little tough with them, you know, that kind of thing. And the final thing is that it's also, I think, important not to be overly sensitive to the way people react to whatever you say. Because I think that's another whole thing I've learned over the years, is that people don't know what's good for them. You know, I mean, I've had people say to me, well, you know, you'd be much more effective if you would just, you know, not say it that way, if you would say it such and such a way. And I say, oh, really? Okay, well, thanks. Now, are you a vegan? And they say, well, no, I'm not a vegan, but, you know, I think you would just be better if you would do it this way. Well, I would be very suspicious of that kind of advice coming from someone who's not a vegan because, you know, they're not, that's basically, they're trying to tell you to do something. They don't want to feel, they don't want to have the heat. So I have found very often that when people say that, and then I see them a few years later, they've actually were glad that I said it that way. So I think it's important to trust ourselves too. And if it gets a little bit uncomfortable, that's not necessarily the end of the world either. I mean, they may, you know, sometimes we do make people uncomfortable. I mean, that's in a sense part of the story here at a basic level. You've probably all heard me quote this, and it's in the World Peace Diet where Emerson says people long to be settled. The only hope for them is that they be unsettled. You know, so we as vegans come into their world in many ways to unsettle them. And nobody wants to be unsettled. We want to be comfortable. Even no matter how painful it is, we'd rather be comfortable than change, typically. And so for people can be resentful of the fact that we're vegans just because of that. And so, again, we don't want to take away the discomfort in the sense that the discomfort is going to help them move forward. So this is why, you know, we are on this call, I think, is to deal with these questions. It's fantastic, I think, to try to plumb to the depths of them. And I think we have to wrestle with the idea that, you know, at a deep level, all of us want to be liked and appreciated by everybody around us. We want to please everybody. And as vegans, we're not going to do that all the time. We're not going to please everybody. And I think there's a certain sickness, in a sense, of being addicted to always pleasing people. You know, it's not a good thing to always try to have to make everybody like us. If we do that all the time, then maybe we're not going to be all that happy ourselves, really. And not only that, we won't probably be a very effective advocate. So we have to be willing to be honest with people in a loving way and let them be uncomfortable about their behavior. If it, you know, brings them up some discomfort, then that's, you know, that's something that's going to have to be dealt with by them. All right, so I think I've said enough about that. Let's see, does anyone else have anything they would like to say about this or any other questions or comments? Just press *6 if you do. And thank you so much, Rochelle, for your question. Maybe I'll unmute your phone. Is there anything else you'd like to say about that, Rochelle?
No, that was helpful. I did want to say thank you, and I was unmuted, so I was like, oh, I want to say thank you for
for spending so much time answering my question. That was good to hear, particularly the part about wanting to please people, because you are right. Being a vegan is not going to be pleasing to everybody, because it just by not eating animal food, it makes people think. And if they don't want to think about it, it can become uncomfortable. So I have to keep that in mind.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of the hardest thing, because people, very often the people we're talking to are, pretty conscious people that maybe they have a spiritual path and everything else, but they're not, they just don't want to look there. And so I think that's the key, is to just keep the communication open. So thanks for your question. It's a great question. It's sort of a fundamental, one of the most important questions I think we can ask is that question you're asking. So, and I don't want to, by the way, I want to say this too. When I respond to a question, when any of us responds to a question, the whole idea is not to think that, okay, now the question is answered. I can forget that and go on to the next thing. I mean, the whole idea is to realize that this question is a living process that is going to bring us to greater and greater heights, hopefully, of understanding, and to not short-circuit it by saying, okay, now it's answered, because I hope I didn't answer it in that sense. I don't want to just close off the process. It's really a living, living in the society is a living, it's this great word in Zen, koan. A koan is a question that will propel us to break through every barrier of delusion. We'll never be able to answer it merely with our intellectual analysis. So, that's the kind of question you're asking, really, is that kind of question. And I just encourage you and me and everyone to engage with that. So thanks so much, Rochelle. It's a great question.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, okay. All right. So I was wondering, was actually another person has their hand up. So maybe I'll go ahead and unmute your phone, too. This is area code 804.
Good evening. This is Grace.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Wonderful to hear from Madeline, and thank you so much, Will, for having this. And I just wanted to contribute to the answer of the question, if I may.
Great. Go ahead.
Yeah, because you and I actually were at a workshop with Dr. Melanie Joy, and looking at advocacy and kind of taking off from that point that you were just saying, without the introduction of the Eastern idea, but that the questions people ask us stem from, it's a process, and that that whenever, in my experience, for about the 5 years that I've been an advocate of veganism, whenever I maybe think that I've answered a question very kind of definitively, factually, that I've got, this is the scientific proof of the thing, people seem to kind of want to dig in their heels and say, well, their experience is different, or that's not what they learned from their parents, or that's not what they see on TV. So I think that I really appreciated being in that advanced advocacy workshop with you and Dr. Melanie Joy up there in Northern California. That was really a very useful and productive exercise of looking at the psychology and sociology and kind of these cultural things behind the resistance to veganism. And so the Carnism Action Awareness Network website is pretty good. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention for the lady with the question, and anybody who's curious about it, is the Humane Myth. The Humane Myth website, humanemyth.org, has a lovely video by James Levesque about in the in a in the tab about advanced advocacy, there's a video called Seasons of the Heart, and he speaks about that evolution and how we kind of grow from being maybe self-centered and kind of maybe kind of immature, and as we progress through this kind of helix of evolution to become more and more compassionate and to expand our circle of concern further, and to be motivated and inspired and find creativity in ways to carry the message, you know, of what's near and dear to our heart. Of course, humanemyth.org is a vegan advocacy organization. So thank you so much for all that you do. And I'm so honored, I'm so blessed, I'm so, it's just, I'm very humbled to be part of your facilitator circle, and I thank you for the work that you do, and I hope that I've contributed something useful to somebody at point for effectively carrying the message. It's like the most important thing that I've found that I can do with my life is to be the opportunity for somebody to open their heart and open their mind to this message. So thank you.
Great. Thanks, Grace. Yeah, that's a good point. I definitely want to recommend some of those resources to people as well. The Humane Myth website has some very interesting stuff there. And also Melanie Joy, her work with carnism, I think very interesting also. So thanks so much. That's great. I appreciate your bringing that up, Grace. Thanks. Great. Okay, let's see here. I was wondering if we could maybe also hear possibly from Lily. Madeline mentioned wanting to hear from Lily, and I was hoping to get to Lily last month and didn't have a chance. Just she's been doing some interesting work, and we were talking about that together on the phone. And I was thinking it'd be nice to share a little bit with the whole group. So, Lily, I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone here. I know you have a lot of experience with phones. You do phone bridges. I was wondering, could you say, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me? Can you hear me well?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Good. Do I sound clear?
Yes.
Not muted. Okay, good. I've been working. I became vegan 7 years ago because of the World Peace Diet. And I've noticed I go on a lot of phone bridge for my eating disorders, 12-step groups that I go to. And I've been thinking, oh, gosh, I just would love to read the World Peace Diet in community. And so I got a number. This was a long time coming because I've been thinking about this for a couple of years. And I got a bridge number. And I've been putting it out there to my fellow people that are in program, as well as everybody. Everybody is welcome to come to this. It's not going to be a 12-step World Peace Diet conference. It's going to be the World Peace Diet study and discussion group. And I'm going to facilitate the group. And I don't know how many people are going to show up for the first session, but that's in my higher power's hands. I'm just doing the legwork and talking to people. People call me almost daily, how do you get protein and blah, blah, blah. And I have really, really talked about the World Peace Diet because I tell them all, you know, you have to have a real reason to be a vegan, and it can't just be health. And the World Peace Diet will give you all the reasons to be a vegan, and then all the other things will fall into place, and I'll help you. And that's what I do. I do it every single day. It's taken off. It's more and more people want to know what's going on. I have people, I've planted seeds with people that told me they didn't want to hear about it. And I always listen carefully to the sound of their voice. And if I hear them pulling away, I back off. And, I get wonderful calls. Like they say, well, I've read the World Peace Diet, and I've read just a couple of chapters, and I'm vegan. What do I do now? I get this all the time. So now we're going to be in a group. We're going to, and it's going to be an open group. It's open-ended. I've committed to getting the World Peace Diet study and discussion group going and continuing till we read the whole World Peace Diet. I am on my fourth reading, and I'm reading it very slowly. What we will do is we will read the World Peace Diet together, and we'll read it maybe a few segments of it, a few paragraphs, or maybe from wherever it changes its thrust, although it's all one it's all one World Peace Diet. It's all the same thing. But, you know, there's those bold prints. We might read a section of that, and then what we'll do is we'll open it for discussion. And, you know, what do you think about what you've just read? Or just keep it very casual, keep it very loving. And for about 30 minutes, we'll do this back and forth. And about the last 15 minutes of the discussion group, I'll have some vegan plants in there, friends of mine, and some of them I sponsor, who are going to tell how they live their vegan life. And many of these people have never read the World Peace Diet. Many of them are not vegan. In fact, most of them are not vegan. So it's going to be a great, for me, I would not be a vegan if it were not for the World Peace Diet. I knew it all. You know, I knew what was happening. And the World Peace Diet broke my resistance completely. I didn't even know I wanted to be a vegan until I read the World Peace Diet. It completely transformed my life. And what I tell people about the World Peace Diet is, this is the book that will change your life. And you will see. It's a great tool for transformation. And that's what people want. They want transformation. And so I'm very excited. I'm a little scared because I've never done anything like this before. But, you know, until I read the World Peace Diet, I had never been a vegan before. And I became a vegan within the first chapter of reading the World Peace Diet, along with my beloved spouse. And hi, Madeline, I love you dearly. And hi, Grace, I've shout out to you. I turned to my husband, he was reading it to me. I said, "We're vegan, aren't we?" And he said, "We're vegan." And that was it. And we never looked back. And I'm so grateful to the World Peace Diet. I'm glad I was born in a time that it was written. I love it. I read it continuously. We read about a paragraph every night now, my husband and I, and then we pray. We pray for the animals. We pray for Will and Madeline, and we pray that this book winds up in the home of every human being on the planet, because we feel it is the greatest tool that we have ever read. And I've read a lot of books on the subject, including some very famous books that I don't want to go into because they're wonderful books and other people became vegan because of them. But I didn't. I became vegan because of the World Peace Diet. I commit my life to it, and I did from the very first day. And I'm going to give you the phone bridge number. Anyone that could possibly come aboard this call, that would be great. If you've already read the World Peace Diet, or I'm sure you wouldn't even be on this call if you haven't. Great to have input when we have the little breaks for discussion. And the number is 712-432-3900. I'll give it again. 712-432-3900, and the code, the access code, is 568-364-pound. Again, 568-364-pound. *6 to mute and *7 to unmute. It's not like this because you can unmute yourself. And I will not be in charge of that, although I will be in charge of mass muting if pandemonium starts and people start yelling and screaming at each other about how they don't want to be vegan. And it's going to be Sunday. We're launching it on Sunday, October 20th, this coming Sunday, at 5 o'clock Western Time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. And that is my pitch for the World Peace Diet Study and Discussion Group on PhoneBridge here in the wild mountains of Northern California, as Will knows. He's been here, and you can do things these days, even when you plan to retreat from the world. This is what happens to you. So,
great. Well, thanks. Thanks. You know, I just want to let everybody know that where Lily lives, Madeline and I got up outside Garberville a few years ago, and Lily actually sponsored a lecture that we gave up there. And we had a chance to visit their land. They are completely off the grid. All their energy they get from the sun, from solar panels, and they live without many dirt roads out there. So it's remarkable without any internet access. I mean, no internet, no. But you're bringing the World Peace Diet message through this phone bridge idea, which I think is a great idea. Something that I don't think anybody else has used. So thanks for pioneering this effort in doing this, Lily. This
I'm very excited about it. It's a dream come true, and I really we keep studying the big book, which is the Alcoholics Anonymous, because our 12-step is all based on that, and it is a fantastic book for transformation for humans. But the World Peace Diet is equally fantastic for the whole world. And those two books, I say that constantly to my friends in the program, those two books are made for each other. And they've changed my life. I'm a different person than I would have been. I'm a completely different person than I would have been without the World Peace Diet. Completely. So I love it, and I love who I am today. I enjoy it, and it is a program of attraction. Veganism is a program of attraction, and I am a program of attraction for it because I come with the joy of being vegan. I come with the spiritual growth from being vegan, and it does. My husband and I sit at dinner, and I say, honey, we've changed. It's internal. You internalize being vegan, and we have a peaceful home today. It's amazing. It is a sanctuary for the World Peace Diet. So I'm very thrilled and happy that my life took this turn, and what a treasure. I thank you so much, Will, for writing this book.
Great. Thank you, Lily. We're looking forward to this. And so this is something you're planning on doing then, basically every Sunday, right? It's not just one
every Sunday till the World Peace Diet is complete, and then we'll go from there. And any time you or Madeline have a Sunday at 5 Western time on the Pacific Coast free, it's an hour. It's just an hour study. That's plenty for people to chew on for, you know, it's plenty.
Right.
I mean, one paragraph is enough to send you into outer space. One of my friends said to me, Lily, when I first became vegan, I was so passionate about it. As you can tell, I'm not passionate anymore. But one of my friends said, Lily, if you talk to me about being vegan, just don't call me. And recently she called and she said, you know, I'm visiting my daughter, and I'm visiting, you know, I'm telling them that I'm vegan and not to buy anything but certain things for me. She was going to the East Coast to visit her family. And I said, you're vegan? And she said, yeah. I said, when did that happen? She said, you planted the seed. I'm a vegan now. So that's what happened.
Ooh.
It is. That's what happens, you know.
Right.
And it does. It happens all the time. So I would say to everybody, don't be afraid of planting those seeds. I don't, you know, don't grab their shirt collar or anything like that, but just speak your truth. Speak your truth. Like Grace does all over her car. I think she's so brave and wonderful. Just speak your truth. And the way you and Madeline go around the world, just speaking what you know. And that's the way to spread the message, and it will happen. I believe my husband is very much more positive than I am. He thinks he will see the vegan revolution in full blossom before we exit the planet. So we'll see. That's what he believes. And he's a lot older than we are, right?
I'm going to
shut up now. And
Okay. Great. Thanks so much. Looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Lily.
Thank you.
Okay. Wow. That was, that's Lily is embarking on that. I wanted to share that. I hope you've all had a chance to look at the resources that I put in as a PDF file into on the website, worldpeacemastery.com/circle/conference. Anyway, I sent you a link for that. It's available, and if you look there, there's this great quote I want to mention by Charles Ledbetter, actually his name is pronounced. "For those of us who are beginning to realize the existence and nature of the great divine scheme of evolution, the privilege of trying in our small way to help it forward is the one purpose of existence." I think that's a beautiful statement. For those of us who are beginning to realize the existence and nature of the great divine scheme of evolution, the privilege of trying in our small way to help it forward is the one purpose of existence. And I think that's more and more we realize that we are part of an unfolding of a divine scheme, or a scheme of spacious awareness that's growing, it's evolving, bringing more joy and helping us to evolve away from the imprisonment and enslavement and misery that we've been inflicting on animals and each other. And to find our unique way to contribute to that, I think, is the purpose for a human life. And human life goes by very quickly. So it's important, I think, for us to remember that and to encourage each other in our actions to bring the message as best we can, to live the message. And I think, as Lily was just talking about, to embody the message. I think it's the most powerful teachers among us are those who are embodying it the most authentically, the most genuinely, the most fully. And to embody veganism means to embody a sense of radical kindness, inclusion, caring for radical in the sense of including everyone, including even little mosquitoes, including even people we disagree with politically, including even future generations who maybe we never will ever get to see them. But on some level, that we each have a unique contribution to make. And in the resources that I was just mentioning, I've got a couple things here. The World Peace Diet has been featured recently on KPFA, which I thought was great, because KPFA in Berkeley has been, up until recently, just almost one of the, you know, I mean, the public, KPFA, and they have a sister station in Los Angeles, which is much more progressive as far as animals, but they were really promoting local meat, dairy products, and eggs at KPFA in Berkeley, but they just featured the World Peace Diet audiobook on their annual fundraiser, and they loved it. People loved it, and apparently they gave away a lot of them or sold a lot of them. So we were really happy about that, to see this progress is being made there. So there's a few, if you get this, when you look at the resources, you'll see there's links to the audio recordings, to the video of me speaking briefly at the Lighthouse Farm Sanctuary. A nice video here of a fellow when we lived in the RV pretty recently, just last year, looking inside of us, what we're doing, how we live our lives there. And then I was going to say there's some nice things, like Shanti, who's a World Peace Diet facilitator. She went through the training the very first year we ever did it. She's just written a book promoting veganism. It's up on Amazon, and I highly recommend having a look at that. Pamela Zeman, also one of our facilitators who's on the call with us often, has a great video in the Farm Sanctuary. She does a lot of wonderful videos. Karen Connolly, she's just graduated from the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training. She's got a new blog, eatinginpeace.com. I think it's great to see what we are all doing. Of course, we know about Megan the Vegan and her website, the Giraffe. I can remember the Giraffe website. There's lots of people doing lots of things. And Tara, I know, was recently working in L.A. Helping with a screening of a movie. I was wondering, Tara, would you like to say a couple words about your experience there with that, and how all that went?
Yes, I'd love to. Hold on just a moment. I was going through your resources and just started playing
the recording. Yeah,
okay.
probably did it in the wrong time. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. I wanted to share another resource for introducing the animal's experience. Sometimes, Rochelle, when you were talking earlier, that really resonated with me. And sometimes it's easier to begin a discussion with a film or some sort of media or a video. And I just recently had the opportunity to show and screen the film A Peaceable Kingdom by A Tribe of Heart. That's James Levesque and Jenny Stein. And it's one of the most incredible films. It doesn't hit anybody over the head, yet it shows enough of what the animal's experience is to awaken people. And it's smart. It's a very smart film. I showed this to a group of socially conscious people, and they were stunned that there was so much they didn't know about what was happening with the animals. After we showed the film, then we sat in a circle and we had discussion. So they had a base to work from what they had just experienced, and they asked a lot of the same questions that they might if you would just started without the film. But now they had more information to begin from. And I think that there was at least 1.5 conversions. Not conversion, that's not really the right word, but one person decided to stop eating meat immediately, and another was going to include more plant-based foods in their diet. And people were really, really impressed, and their questions were very, very good. And it just seemed to go a lot smoother than it might be if I just tried to present their experience. Right. Another thing that I found that was really interesting, just one more quick point, was that the they kept saying to me, and I've not had this happen before, they said 3 or 4 times, gosh, you know, usually vegans are so judgmental and they blame everybody all the time, you know. So being very careful of that, to not come from a place of you, but as Will said, from a place of I and my experience and from what I've seen, and not making them feel uncomfortable in any way. And they just kept saying, you know, gosh, you're not like that. So I'm working really hard at it.
Congratulations.
I think also that we were all born into this culture. That's a really good answer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I know it's true. I think a lot of people enjoy, I think, if they're eating meat, thinking of vegans as being these, you know, sort of party spoilers who are always blaming them, and they can just sort of write us off if we fulfill that kind of vision. So I think it's important for us also to act in a different way. So thanks for doing that. That's great. All right. So let's see here. I wanted to also just mention a few more things. You know, we have this. We talked on the last call quite a bit about this, towards the end anyway, not quite a bit, but some about the Wheat Belly book. We had a question about that, and Julia from Germany gave us a link to this really excellent critique of that book, and so I think it's helpful probably if you're hearing people who are being critical of eating plant-based foods as a way to be unhealthy or something like that, based on the Wheat Belly book. This critique, I think, is a very thorough, and it was interesting. Apparently, John McDougall did a whole special thing, Dr. McDougall from Santa Rosa, that this is basically the Atkins diet, sort of, you know, dressed up in new clothes. And apparently, the fact that this fellow that wrote the Wheat Belly book is quite obese himself, same way Atkins was. It's all kind of interesting. But anyway, there's I think it's helpful to be aware of some of the mistakes in the Wheat Belly book And if anyone wants to go in, I don't want to take a lot of time with it on a call tonight, but I think it's good to be just read through that and become aware of it. And there's also some other great news. Some zoos are, like the fact that Costa Rica is closing their zoos, and there's been more and more calling. I've seen this. There's also recently a British fellow who's a famous zookeeper who was saying we shouldn't have animals in zoos anymore, and I think we need to see that more. But I think personally, I do feel that working for veganism is the best thing anyone can do for animals, because the more people go vegan, the more this whole, all the other forms of animal exploitation will begin to lose their foothold. I think that that's really the most powerful thing that anyone can do, is actually to work toward helping people to move in that direction of veganism. There's quite a good bunch of articles that have been coming out in the last month disputing the paleo diet and the idea that our ancestors all ate meat, and showing that the research nowadays shows that our ancestors were mostly vegetarian or vegan, not meat eaters. And so I do think it's very helpful to familiarize yourself with that research as well. The fact that if we look carefully, we see that we find now, going back 30,000 years, 50,000 years, evidence of people grinding grains, baking bread, and so this is not just a recent phenomenon. It goes back very far. And the new theory, of course, because, I mean, we hear these theories that the only reason that human beings were able to evolve, that our brains got bigger, was because people started eating meat. And eating all that meat, all that protein and all that fat, suddenly gave us this huge evolutionary leap. And that's been debunked by many people, really, many MDs. I mean, it's one of those things, you know. One MD said, well, if that was true, then lions would be the smartest people on the whole planet, you know. but actually, there's a, you know, John McDougall has had a fellow, we just saw him not too long ago in Portland, and he was telling us how that we should really listen to, I can't remember the guy's name, but there's a fellow scientist that he just had on one of his advanced study weekends, who's written a book, or at least a series of articles, that talk about how in his research it was when human beings started cultivating and eating grains, and that was when this huge leap in our evolution, so-called evolution, happened, where we suddenly started the brain size got bigger, and we began having more complex societies and so forth. So grains give us a lot of energy. They're really packed, and that's something that I see actually becoming more and more accepted. One of the things that, in the very beginning when I was talking about the World Peace Diet, I would occasionally have people urging me to go on a completely raw diet. And I think eating, you know, a good percentage of uncooked foods, fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, and so forth, sprouts, like Madeline was saying, is an excellent idea. You get so much great, you know, a lot of high quality nutrients in uncooked, you know, those kinds of foods, you know, uncooked, you know, fresh vegetables and fruits and so forth, nuts. But the whole idea of being a complete raw foodist is pretty much over. I think it's not really viable for, I think it's become pretty obvious. Yeah, but I think it's great, you know, if people want to have a mostly raw diet or something like that, but to not get too caught up in the whole cooked, uncooked thing, it can be sort of a distraction, I think. I think it is important, though, to make sure as a vegans, that we eat whole foods, unprocessed, organically grown plant-based diet really makes a difference. To know what you're doing when you're preparing your foods, and in the Vegan Palooza and so forth, we interviewed a lot of people, and we heard that over and over again, the importance of eating a healthy plant-based diet. So, but that's what we see anyway. When we look deeply into the way we're designed, we thrive on these foods. It's fantastic. So that's that. And then also, there's a great article here on honey. This is the best article I've ever seen. It's called Three Reasons Not to Eat Honey. It's quite heartbreaking to see the devastation that we're just visiting upon bees. And I don't think people realize how serious it is. Bees are really, from the very beginning of honey making, especially when it became more commercialized, it's basically based on the dairy model of a rape and kill operation where the queens are impregnated against their will. The male worker bees, the same thing they do with the bulls, they sort of extract the semen from them. They extract the semen from the male bees, they impregnate into the females, and then they just ship these bees around. Many of them die on the way. They ship multiple bees, and then they put them in these little, square boxes, which is very unnatural for them, and then they have to introduce a queen, and very often the queen will not be accepted by the hive, so they kill that queen and bring in another queen. The operators do this, and then they steal the honey, she said how it takes a honeybee her entire lifetime to make just one teaspoon of honey, and how we just, don't really respect that, I don't think, or appreciate the amount of work, and that they make that bee for the honey for themselves, not for us. And so, and then the fact that these bee operations, the European honeybee is more or less taken over, and a lot of the native pollinators in our ecosystems, the bumblebees that were here before the Europeans came, the digger bees and other natural pollinators have all been driven to the brink of extinction by the invasion of the factory farmed bees and the industrialized pollination using bees and honey making. So bees are very, very highly intelligent, complex creatures with emotional lives. Now we realize that actually they seem to display various emotions, and this wholesale destruction, the fact of colony collapse disorder and bees just dying out in massive numbers, I think shows that our devastation of ecosystems through animal agriculture is on every level. It's really from the oceans to the rainforest to the insects and the birds and the fish and wildlife. We're seeing, unfortunately, the loss of most of the species that live in the wild now in Africa, the African elephants, and lions and zebras and giraffes, and all these animals are now threatened with extinction in the coming years. It looks very bleak, actually, that they'll survive because their habitat's being decimated because people are eating more meat now in Africa. They're cutting down forest to grow grain, and so there's more and more run-ins, and it's eating animal foods that's the driving force behind this devastation, which is really unnecessary. Unfortunately, it all goes back to the same mentality and the same practice of eating animal foods that's wiping out wildlife. So the more we can model this, understand this, and celebrate it, and bring the message to our fellow Americans and other, whoever we happen to be. I say Americans because I just was, again, contemplating how the United States has unfortunately been in many ways the model culture for the rest of the world, and it would be so great if we could begin modeling a more healthy, mature behavior for the rest of the world with our movies and with our music, with our art, with our literature. And that's hoping to do. The World Peace Diet, actually, there's been good news the last couple of weeks. We've gotten, finally, some really positive feedback from some of the major European languages to have the book translated into German and into French. One of our World Peace Diet facilitators, Stefan Goodwin, is an amazingly wonderful person, translated the entire book into French, and now he's translating it into German, single-handedly, basically. And setting up websites and seeing, contacting publishers and really getting the book out there. And we're working on doing the same thing in Spanish. It's been translated by volunteers in Spanish. And I don't want to go on and on here, but quite a few other languages too. But it's great to see it coming into some of these major European languages to spread that way, and as well as in China and other places. So anyway, so we've got those main things, and then the rest of the stuff I don't want to go on here, but There's quite a few other, you can just look through the other, it's about another page and a half of articles that I have here that are fascinating, really, to me, is quite a lot of interesting things. I just recommend you checking out some of the videos and the news here. New USDA rules allow feces, pus, and bleach in chicken, you know, those kinds of things. Anyone who's still eating animal foods, I think, at this point, must be completely disconnected from what's the reality of what's going on. I think I've covered most of the things. There was a few more things. We're at the Jubilee, which is the fifth annual event here in Cincinnati based on the World Peace Diet. It's just been a wonderful experience to be here. There's this whole idea of connecting with the spiritual dimension of veganism, bringing in yoga, bringing in meditation, and so forth. I also wanted to say a couple things about the forum and just encourage everyone to go ahead and register if you haven't registered already and then begin using it. We may be able to bring in all the old threads from the forum, from the old forum. We're working on that. Tara is actually a wonderful, she has a great understanding of the technical sides of all these things. But we're going to try to bring in some of the old, but we may not be able to bring in the old threads, so we're going to go ahead and start with new threads and just begin talking on things. And so I just wanted to let you know about that. And also on the forum to click the notify button. I think it's really helpful to click notify. And that way when you click the notify button, then when you post something, you'll get an email that someone else has posted something and you can then respond to it. So be aware of that. There's a special place in the forums on the forum where you can click notify. You'll see it right up there on the right, upper right. It says new topic, new poll, notify. And just click on that and then you'll start. It's much nicer, I think, you get to hear when people respond to what you've posted. So those are the main things I think I wanted to mention. I also wanted to mention maybe one other thing, and I realize actually I'm looking at the board. We lost a few people. I think, sorry about that. I think I maybe went AWOL for a few minutes there. I'm not sure if it was my phone or if it was maybe the actual phone system. But anyway, I wanted to mention that we're considering doing a live facilitator training again. We haven't done one for 2.5 years about. It'll be, I mean, a live, an online training. And we may do it in the next few weeks, or we may wait. You know, we have the holidays coming up. I didn't want to have it run into the holidays, but we may have it begin and then continue on after the holidays. So I was just wondering if you all have any thoughts about that. We want to make it available, probably do an 8-week facilitator training, and then maybe a 4-week mastery program, or maybe a 4-week, maybe not call it mastery, we're wondering what to call this, but and then maybe also if anyone would like to see something beyond the facilitator training. I'm just wondering if anybody has any input about that, because we have this, I feel like a natural cycle now where it would be a good idea to do another live training for a fresh one. And I just wanted to see if you have any thoughts about that, anything you'd like to see included, any particular timing that you'd like to have on it. Maybe I'll go ahead and write about it on the forums, and you can tell me what you think there, think it over. But we did want some feedback about that as well. All right, so I just want to thank everyone for joining us on the call today. And does anyone have any last-minute questions or comments before we begin to wrap it up? If you do, please let me know. And otherwise, I'm going to be jumping into a big day here tomorrow, and I'm sure you all are too. But here at the Jubilee, we've got I'm going to be doing 3 hours tomorrow morning on the World Peace Diet, kind of a facilitator training intensive. And some of you are familiar with the role-playing exercises that we've done, which is really something I highly recommend. Just, you know, doing a role play with someone where one person takes the role of being the vegan, and another person takes the role of being someone who's not a vegan because of, you know, there's like 7 or 8 I give as examples, reasons. Like, I'm not a vegan because Jesus ate meat, so it's a you know, perfectly fine because I'm a Christian, or I'm not a vegan because I just don't want to disrupt my social life, and then my social life is very important to me, and being a vegan would be too much of a disruption, or I'm not a vegan because I just don't think that animal suffering is significant. Plants probably suffer as much as animals do, and so I just think it's illogical to care about animals more than you care about plants. Or there's quite a few different standard kind of reasons that most people have for not wanting to be open to the idea of moving to a plant-based diet for ethical reasons. And so I think it's very helpful to do role-playing with people as just an exercise to get a feeling for how that goes. And, of course, the key in that really is to, again, listen and then tell my own story, agree with, instead of disagree, and create, as best we can, a harmonious response that where people feel that they are being heard. Because I think if we just write them off and say, well, that's a stupid thing, and so forth, then we don't really make any progress. So I'm going to wrap it up there, I think. We have, if you know anybody in the Cleveland area, I'll be going up to Cleveland in a few days after we finish up here with all of the different events that are here. There's vegan cooking classes, vegan yoga. I mean, yoga as a vegan practice basically is the main thrust here. And then we have the a couple of lectures in Cincinnati, and then to the University of Calgary. Very exciting to see even universities are really wanting to bring the vegan message in to their students. So keep up the great work, everyone. Thanks, all of you, for joining us on the call. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you next time our paths cross. I'm not exactly sure when that'll be. Keep an eye on our schedule at willtuttle.com. We're going to be coming to Massachusetts, and then we have more things going on here in California. And if you'd like us to come to your area, then please let us know. I think that's about it for now. And I don't see any other anyone raising their hand or pressing *6. So I'll just close now and just wish you all a wonderful month. We'll be getting together again in November. The third Thursday in November is the 21st of November. And so looking forward to that. And we'll be in touch about the facilitator training, if we're going to be doing another one, and also any other news that we have. And then we'll look forward to seeing you on the forums as well. Keep up the great work you're doing, and never doubt that the efforts that we're making, that you're making, and that we're all making are bearing fruit. I think it's obvious that the vegan movement is gathering momentum, and the more I think that we work on the inner dimension of this and cultivate kindness for all living beings, I think the more we'll be able to bless our world. So much love to you all, and thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to next time. Many blessings to you, and thanks for joining us.